Support for IPR comes from Corridor Vein Center and Corridor Aesthetics, treatment for varicose veins and spider veins, also providing facial rejuvenation services and treatment for moderate to severe acne. More at Corridor Vein and CorridorAesthetics.com.
It's River to River from IPR News. I'm Ben Kiefer. When you hear the words bank failure, what comes to mind? How about this?
You're thinking of this place all wrong, as if I had the money back in a safe. The money's not here. Well, your money's in Joe's house. That's right next to yours. And in the Kennedy house, and Mrs. Maitland's house, and 100 others. You're lending them the money to build, and then they're going to pay it back to you as best they can. Now, what are you going to do, foreclose on them?
Of course, the pleas of George Bailey, played by Jimmy Stewart from 1946. Today, the nation's top financial regulators are facing a grilling from lawmakers. We just heard in our NPR news this after the collapse of Silicon Valley Bank, the second largest bank failure in U.S. history. Central question here, why was this firm allowed to grow so rapidly and build up so much risk that it failed, which then required a government rescue for depositors while the shockwaves crossed global markets, shockwaves that reached Iowa companies. We'll find that out later. We'll hear from two Iowa-based tech startup founders, CEOs. Each had a scare and had to regroup after SVB's failure. Toward the end of the hour, an Iowa banker who responded to one Silicon Valley venture capitalist's needs. And along the way, we'll learn what you should know about your own banking security. Let's start off to get a better handle on what happened a couple of weeks ago, that bank failure and the ramifications. Let's start off with Michelle Williams. Michelle is Associate Professor of Management and Entrepreneurship and the John L. McClow Fellow in Entrepreneurship at the UI Tippy College of Business. Michelle, welcome back to our program.
Thank you. Great to be back.
This is all very involved in our news, as we heard at the top of the hour. In terms that we can all understand, I'm sure you're able to do that. What happened a couple of weeks ago?
So there was a big scare. Basically, what happened is Silicon Valley Bank put out a statement from the CEO saying that they had lost some money and that they were going to try to raise funds. And sometimes when those statements go out, they're framed in a way and the investors are confident in the bank's ability to raise that money. In this case, it set off a scare. So people started pulling their money out. It went on social media. It kind of blew up and went viral. And so people tried to, in a very short period of time, in one day, pull out billions and billions of dollars. And as your clip, 42 billion to be exact, and as your clip showed from It's a Wonderful Life,
right?
I love that, is that banks, we sometimes think in our mind that all the money is in the bank vault, right? We see that on television. People want to get in, robbers come and they go into the bank vault. But what a bank is actually doing is it's taking your money, and some of it keeps in what we call liquid assets. So you can take money out of the bank whenever you need it. And other money, it invests. And what happens when everybody wants to pull out their money at the same time, there's money in investments that would take time to get out. And that's when the bank has to, kind of stop operating. It's being taken over by the Fed or the FTC just to kind of damp that down. And in this case, very quickly, we had the government come in and let people know, we are going to guarantee the funds of the investors. So it may take a moment or two, and they did this very quickly. The Federal Reserve lent money so that people could use those large sums. This bank, in terms of managing risk, had over 90% of its assets were above the federal insurance rate of $250,000. So there was a lot of money that was not insured that the government then secured. And that money was not just sitting around. That was money that startups were using for their payroll. So that is what caused such panic, because people then didn't know if they could make payroll. And if they couldn't make payroll, then, you know, everyday workers would not be able to make the purchases, get their, you know, pay their rent and things like that. But that was avoided. And one of the biggest challenges for the Federal Reserve and for the other larger banks in the ecosystem was to reassure depositors, because if depositors, the banks did have the money, it just wasn't in liquid assets. And so that the fear and the run is what caused the instability in the banking system.
Mm-hmm. So yes, fear. So I heard the word used by various journalists and reading, contagion. So fear is the virus in this potential virus in this case. And we can go back to FDR's words during the Great Depression, nothing to fear but fear itself. Right. So that was the hinge here.
It really was. Once everyone started pulling out their money, the bank didn't have the ability to raise the funds and do the things that it needed to do to remain stable. And then that fear spread. So kind of everyday people in Iowa were saying, is my money safe?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Yeah. And people were moving their money to money market funds and to the larger kind of big five banks like JP Morgan, which then would put a strain on our local banking system.
Right.
And so that was the fear that's why the government stepped in so quickly, is because they didn't want the fear to cause this kind of cascading effect of people moving their money, and then banks that were really solid and doing well would end up becoming in crisis because everybody pulled their money out at the same time.
Right. And in just a moment, we'll hear from an Iowa entrepreneur, successful entrepreneur who, was well above his company, well above that $250,000 mark, and then went to this bank, Silicon Valley Bank, tried to pull it out when, you know, that fear, that contagion was in the air, and it's not available. So
exactly.
The generous way of putting that was it ruined his weekend and his CFO's weekend.
that was a rough weekend for us all.
Okay. Talk about, we could do a whole show about the fallout nationwide, worldwide here, but in a nutshell, how big was the fallout here from this episode?
So the fallout, I think, was contained in the end. But what happened was banks, the medium-sized banks, their stock prices plummeted. And that had ripple effects on the stock market itself. So we had days when the stock market was really down. Right now it's you know, as you reported on NPR, it's level right now, but it still has a way to move back up. So it really affected the financial markets, people. It affected banks in Europe, like Credit Suisse. And so there were ripple effects. However, they were contained. We didn't see a collapse of our banking system.
And we'll talk to an Iowa banker toward the end of this program, but the implication for smaller banks, Iowa banks, Midwest banks, was there, and I think we'll hear this later in the hour firsthand from the head of this bank, is there, was there a flow from these larger banks where people go, I don't know about that bank, but I do know my bank in my backyard. I'm going to go to a smaller or a mid-sized bank.
So that's an interesting point, because we saw a lot of money going into the bigger banks, but then a more moderate-sized bank like Northern Trust, they said in the last 2 weeks, their new customers and return customers were up 62% over that same period last year. So you are seeing people look for the banks they trust.
Mm-hmm. How much of this is a regulatory problem? Let's go back to 2008. Those of us who were consuming the news back then, we had that devastating financial meltdown, yep. 2008. Weren't there safeguards put in place to prevent future catastrophes? Were these banking regulations still in place when SVB took a nosedive a couple weeks ago?
So the banking regulations had been loosened a bit on moderate-sized banks. However, almost no bank can sustain a run. So when we're looking at this situation, the regu you know the regula regu regula the regulations do not determine how much above the insured amount a bank is allowed to hold.
Okay.
And so that's kind of one point, is that they had 93% of their accounts were larger than that amount. That's not, a lot of banks have maybe 20%, and so that ratio is going to make a difference, and that itself is not regulated. That piece is not regulated.
Right, we've just got a couple minutes left, but you said it was a rough weekend for all of us. How was it a rough weekend for you?
So it's really interesting during that weekend, because we kind of saw the bank fall. I'm involved with a lot of startups. I was talking to a startup who was in Silicon Valley. He said, he left his money in, and there's still some checks that aren't clearing, that weren't clearing yet when I spoke to him. But a lot of the financial institutions were getting all of their people on webinars. They were putting on their lawyers, their labor lawyers, so people could understand what does it mean if I can't make payroll this week, and what does it mean if
Yeah.
if I can't make it in the long term, do I have to furlough people? So there were a lot of professional institutions really getting on and saying, let's help our startup founders, let's help our customers really understand this situation.
And in 30 seconds, what is the takeaway for mere mortals? I'll just put it that way, those of us who are not in startups or big companies.
So I think the real takeaway for mortals is that our banking system is stable. They do have the money that that they need to secure the funds, and that one thing that we also saw is banks coming together and supporting other banks. So your money is safe. The government was securing money for depositors that were even above the 250, and also the idea that credit unions are also safe. And credit unions, the difference between credit unions and banks often is unclear to people, but credit unions are also safe. They're insured by a different insurer, and that these local banks, it's important to to do your due diligence, but just have faith in your local banks, because they're the ones that do a lot of the commercial lending. They're lending to the small businesses
Okay.
in your neighborhood, to your food checks. And so those local banks are important.
Michelle Williams, always good to have you on the program. Michelle Williams of the University of Iowa Tippie College of Business. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ben.
Back in just a moment.
Support for IPR comes from Corridor Vein Center and Corridor Aesthetics, treatment for varicose veins and spider veins, also providing facial rejuvenation services and treatment for moderate to severe acne. More at Corridor Vein and CorridorAesthetics.com. This IPR podcast is supported by Cultivating Compassion, the Dr. Richard Deming Foundation, fostering causes that enrich the community, generate understanding, and cultivate compassion, including Above and Beyond Cancer.
It's River to River from IPR News. I'm Ben Kiefer. If you just joined us, the hour, this one is all about the recent collapse of Silicon Valley Bank and the financial shockwaves that have rippled through the U.S. banking system and our economy because of it. Silicon Valley Bank, SVB, the largest U.S. bank failure, think about this, since that horrible crisis back in 2008 and 2009, that financial crisis. The FDIC seized control of the Silicon Valley Bank a couple of weeks back after a run on deposits left it insolvent. So next, let's hear from Iowans whose businesses were impacted by this. And let's say hello again to Matthew Rhoda. He was back on this program, and I had to shudder a little bit to think of how much time, how quickly the time has passed when I think he was back on this program in 2017, then a recent UI graduate with a remarkable invention he described to us then, one that keeps track of health data about pigs, swine, and prevents piglets from being crushed when their mothers roll over. Matthew Roda, founder and CEO of SwineTech Inc., welcome back to our program.
Thank you for having me. It does feel like forever since I've been
on here.
Doesn't it? It does.
Okay. I want to catch up on how your business is doing after we talk about how your business is mixed up with this financial failure of a bank. So let's, first of all, remind our listeners, you graduated in 2016, I think.
Correct.
And you studied genetics, biotechnology, business management. You started SwineTech in 2015, based in Solon. Let's go to the story now of how your business became involved with this bank, SVB, and then talk about the repercussions you felt because of that bank failure. Where did SwineTech first cross paths with your company?
So Silicon Valley Bank and SwineTech were crossing paths for years before we started working with them. In 2019, we went through an accelerator program in Dublin, Ireland, where we spent a few weeks out there, and there was an exchange of international funding. And the local banks didn't necessarily make that exchange very easy. And so we were recommended by a lot of individuals, you need to find a bigger bank when you start doing international transactions. And so we looked at a few different banks and quickly found that Silicon Valley Bank was the most accessible to startups. They were also the ones that understood startups the most from a funding standpoint, investment community. It was just the bank that got you. Just like as if a farmer was looking for a local bank, they're probably going to understand what banks understand farmers and go with them. Same concept.
Okay. So let's go back, we'll rewind time a little bit, a couple of weeks. I said the FDIC, seized the bank, took it over after the run on the bank on March 10th. That was a Friday. When did you and your CFO, I imagine, first get wind there were problems? How did you hear?
So I heard from an email and a text message from a couple board members that were saying, hey, something's happening right now.
This was in that week?
Yes. This was the day before the FDIC seized the bank, and this would have been late in the afternoon. And I was at an event called Pork Forum in Orlando. And so I was busy that entire afternoon, entire night. And so I didn't see it till early in the evening. And then I immediately shot it over to our CFO and asked her, I said, hey, what do you think we should do here? She woke up, gave me a phone call because she didn't get it till before she went to bed. And we decided we were going to pull funds from the bank because it was pretty clear it was going on a run and it was going to collapse. So,
in a ballpark figure, can you give us an idea of how many funds we're talking about?
I can't tell you how many funds, but it was in the millions. So there was a lot of funding that we needed to move.
That's an idea, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
It was much more than the $250,000 in insured funds.
Okay. So at this point, so you want to go pull funds? Were you able to do that?
We were not able to pull the funds. So we actually processed the transaction. Then as it was saying processing, we got the news release saying the FDIC had taken over management. So basically, we were slightly too late.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So your thoughts, your CFO's thoughts at that moment, are you thinking what? What kind of impact this could have on SwineTech?
Yeah, we're thinking, oh, crap. Like, what now?
Yeah.
Neither of us had ever gone through anything like this. It was completely new waters for both of us. And we reached out to our board and really talked to some of them. And they had known individuals that had gone through things in the past, and so they were feeding us information as time was going by. But it was kind of a whirlwind. We didn't know what to expect, when things were going to come. We knew the next time we'd really hear something was probably Monday.
Yeah. So, I'm trying to think of the timeline here because it was the FDIC took over and
about 9 a.m. or so.
Who would have had up to like $250,000 would be insured.
We knew that was insured. We knew $250,000.
But you've got millions. You've got millions here. So
yeah, there's a lot on the line.
Okay, there's a lot on the lines. What happened next?
So after that, we basically pulled together our leadership management team and evaluated what is the crisis situation that we're in and how do we manage through it. We decided that there wasn't a whole lot that we could do before Monday until we learned more from the FDIC and what was going on there. And so we basically role-played out a few different scenarios. What if we don't get any of the money? What if we get the money, but it takes them 3 to 6 months to get us the money? Mm-hmm. What if we get the money right away?
And in the, let's just go to the worst case scenario. That's where the drama is. What was your worst case scenario for your company?
Worst case scenario for us is we didn't get any of the money. And I had to work with investors and our customers to figure out another way of funding the business.
How big of a dent, if I can put it as a dent, maybe it was bigger than a dent, would it have put in your company's future?
It would have just delayed our future substantially. It would have set us back probably a year and a half on what our goals would have been.
Okay.
Because
significant.
It would have been significant unless there were some things that we could have done with our partners and investors to kind of counteract that. But it would have either had a very big personal impact to myself and our team, or it would have set us back quite a bit.
Okay. That Monday rolls around. What happens in the next week then?
So we got access to our money when the FDIC basically took over and said, we are going to give all depositors their funding. And so we found that out probably 3-4 o'clock on Sunday.
Oh, on Sunday already.
Uh-huh. Yep, thankfully. So on Sunday, and by that time I had flown to San Francisco and I had landed and found out that we were going to get all of our funding. And at that point, it was just a simple transaction in the morning where we did the basic transfer. So fortunately, it was very easy. They made it very painless that process.
For radio purposes, can you do a big sigh of relief that you would have felt then?
What would that? Basically, it was, thank God. You just didn't know.
That was a good sigh of relief.
Yeah, you did not know what was going to happen. And for me, faith's a good rock for me. I have a great team. We have great funding, investors, and a great customer base. And so I'd say through that whole process, I probably didn't fully embrace how awful of a situation we were in, because we had a pretty good group of individuals working with us through that whole process. But man, for us, we knew. So our payroll's end of the month.
Yeah.
And
how many are on your payroll?
16 individuals. Mm-hmm. And we knew we could make payroll. We knew we were going to figure that out, whether it was through investment. We didn't have to worry about letting people go. Mm-hmm. I mean, we were going to be okay. But there were other companies that had to make payroll on Monday. And there were other companies that had no more funding to make that payroll. So I can't imagine how stressful I would have been if I was in that situation. So very grateful that we at least were in the situation we were when I was navigating that weekend.
I'm sitting across from you. You're smiling. You're cheery. What was the real emotional toll that this took on you and other key members of your business?
The weekend was shot. The weekend was shot. You did everything you could just to kind of role play and plan out A, B, C, D, E. What are all the different ways that this could go? And the information kept changing by the hour.
Little sleep, little good sleep.
Little good sleep. All of the information coming through the news was like doomsday. And of course, then you have a ton of individuals that are fighting over whether or not depositors, debt holders, shareholders should be supported or should they not be supported. And then as things grew, our board was really reassuring us that the more bad news that we're hearing, the better it is for the situation. And the Des Moines Register used the term perverse when I said the bad news was good news, when in reality, it's a little stretch on the truth.
You wanted to be bad enough so that the government would take more
action. You wanted people to scream loud enough so people took action.
Yeah.
You wanted people to at least fully become aware of how significant the situation was and take it seriously in a short matter of time.
So you liked words like contagion.
I don't think I liked any of it, but
I knew silence
was the worst situation we could have been in. If nobody was talking about it, then that was the worst possible thing.
Just one little bank on an island going down and not tied to the whole system. That's the bad scenario.
Yeah, bad scenarios, nobody really cares.
Yeah, okay. So everything good now? What's the status now?
So everything's good. We got all of our funding. Life is resumed as normal. I guess we did take a few steps to kind of ensure that this couldn't happen to us again in the future.
All right, let's get to that, the reflective part of this conversation.
Yes.
What are your takeaways, you and your CFO and the others involved here? What's not going to happen with SwineTech again? What steps will you never take again because of this?
You're never going to assume that any of your banks are too big to fail. I mean, that's the big thing at this point. We're in a world where one individual can tweet something. And that's not what happened in this situation. But one individual could tweet something and get individuals start pulling funding. And so I feel like through social media, through a connected world that we have today, there's less control for banks to kind of bank the way they always have been. Mm-hmm. So
how do you protect yourself then?
You diversify and you insure.
Several banks.
Several banks, more insurance. We found through this whole process that there is forms of insurance that you can get that insure you beyond that $250,000. Nobody really talked about that. We're finding that venture capitalist funds are going to start putting requirements on diversification. That was something that was never talked about before. It was just find somebody regional,
yeah,
and find somebody big. That was really all anybody had ever talked about.
And hopefully, by all measures, this is not going to become another 2008-2009 scenario.
Yeah, hopefully it won't, and it doesn't seem like it's going to be, but it's definitely putting the financial sector under the microscope, that's for sure.
Right, and that's healthy.
Yes.
You go to the doctor, you find out you have something wrong that can be nipped in the bud, and this is the same thing.
Yes. I mean, hopefully we come out of this seeing this as an opportunity, and sorry for Silicon Valley Bank for being the one to take the fall for it, but fortunately our entire financial situation—
They took on the risk, right?
They took on the risk. They knew what they were doing. And in some cases, maybe they didn't. That's even worse.
Yeah. Okay. Now we get, there's my sigh of relief because your story made me all tense. Now I'm all happy again, thinking about that. So to end here, Matthew, how's your business doing? How has it grown? Give us the length and breadth of it in the 6 years since we spoke.
So it's grown quite a bit, and that's what made all of this that crazy was— We had started in college. We'd gone through COVID. Now we were going through the second largest banking crisis in American history. And it was like, is there going to be any risk factor that we could have planned for here? Like, nobody plans for a worldwide global pandemic. Nobody plans that your bank's going to be the second largest bank to fail. But early on, we started with that voice recognition technology that could save little baby pigs when they got rolled on by their mother. We got it patented. We're Forbes Under 30, won Microsoft and MIT award. But we found early 2020, right before COVID, that we needed a more widespread ability to manage quality of care. And so what we did was we actually took what exists as patient management services and point of care solutions in healthcare, and we reapplied that to animal agriculture.
Amazing.
Yep. So we're a workforce management point of care platform for animal agriculture today, and we're growing really, really quickly in the U.S. and Canada.
How many customers, roughly, do you have?
So customers is difficult, but I can say we're doing about 200-some thousand sows and 6.7 million pigs under management.
Do you have data on how many piglets you've saved with your technology?
Oh, it would have been easily over a million.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Amazing. Matthew Rota, founder and CEO of SwineTech, Inc., founded just a few years ago in Solon, Iowa, and now has another chapter. This will be good for your memoir.
We were saying that. We actually said, wow, just another chapter, right? It's part of the story. I think some people were saying that to keep their heads sane. They said it's just another part of the story.
Make you more resilient.
Absolutely.
All right, Matthew, you take care. Looking forward to another conversation on a cheerier topic. Let's do that.
Sounds great.
All right, thanks. That conversation with Matthew recorded yesterday, talking this hour on River to River about the fallout from the second largest bank failure in U.S. history. The Silicon Valley Bank collapsed a couple of weeks ago. We all heard about that. Required a government rescue for depositors. Shockwaves not only across the country, but across global financial markets. And shockwaves that certainly reached Iowa companies, as we're hearing about during today's programs. In a few minutes, an Iowa banker from Clive who responded to one venture capitalist's needs. Let's first talk with Russell Kareem, founder and CEO of a company called Dakai, if I have that pronunciation right, Dakai Inc. Russell, welcome to the program.
Ben, thank you so much. Yeah, thanks for having me.
And let's have you tell us, first of all, before you have your Silicon Valley Bank story, acquaint us with yourself and your company. You were originally from Bangladesh, and you started this company up in 2021. Tell us about it.
My company called Dakai.com, we are a fashion technology company that enable apparel brand fashion designers and promotional clothing brands to really go from idea to getting their product manufactured ethically and sustainably through our marketplace. So think of us with the penetration of mobile phone and internet and access to social media. Everybody these days wants to create their own clothing line. So what we had created, we created a technology to allow anybody to go from idea to launching their brands. Mm-hmm. So that's in a nutshell what we do.
And like Matthew, our previous guest, you're a graduate of an Iowa university, you and I in this case, right? A degree in computer science. And then you had something to do with the venture schools at the UI?
Yes. So, yeah, I graduated with UNI with the computer science and entrepreneurship. Also, I have done venture school with the University of Iowa twice.
Okay. And we are going to go to a break in about a minute. How did you get involved? A short first part of the chapter. How did you get involved with SVP?
So, yeah, again, as we launch our company, so a little bit of my background, actually, exited a company in 2019 to Eat Street. So when we started a new company, we really knew that this is a company that will be taking venture funds. This is mm-hmm. a company we really want to grow really quick and need a lot of resources. Mm-hmm. So part of it, this kind of preparation, I think we're also looking into the banks that we should be working with. And we know that right away, talking to a lot of the tech company in our space, a lot of them, they're already working with the Silicon Valley Bank. So it's really kind of that credibility and the validation from other founders kind of lead us to doing banking with Silicon Valley.
When we come back, Russell Kareem of Dakai.com will tell us what happened a couple of weeks ago in his case and what kind of shape his company is now because of that one bank failure, the second largest bank failure in U.S. history. We'll be back with Russell when we return. It's River to River from IPR News.
This IPR podcast is supported by Cultivating Compassion, the Dr. Richard Deming Foundation, fostering causes that enrich the community, generate understanding, and cultivate compassion, including above and beyond cancer.
Sure glad you're investing in Iowa Public Radio this hour. Use that word, of course, because we're talking about banks and bank collapses. One specific bank, Silicon Valley Bank, collapsed a couple of weeks ago, requiring a government rescue. Talking about hearing some stories from Iowans connected with SVB. And Russell Kareem is with us, founder and CEO of Dakai.com. Okay, you told us, Russell, before the break, a little bit about your company. Take us back to how you first were made aware of this imminent bank collapse and what happened with your company.
Ben, I was actually in Chicago in one of our investors. So on Thursday, I was in Chicago meeting, but for investor in person. And that evening, received an email from one of our existing investor that, hey, if you have funds in Silicon Valley, pull it out right now. So just these type of communication that we have received right away. Didn't have much of context that what happening, plus I had a lot of meetings there. But after digging and talking to a few others, right away we initiated our transfer from the bank. But I think by the time we initiated bank, already they're pretty much shutting down all the wares that's just gathered, and they're just stopped processing any of the wares. And the next day we knew that in the morning coming in that, oh, there's a bank run. And there's a lot of unknowns at that point.
So you didn't like Matthew before the conversation I had with Matthew. The sum that you couldn't pull out was in the millions.
We are within the FDIC insurance. So again, still we didn't know how all those things would work out, right? There's a lot of unknowns at that point. Even we're able to... are you able to pull money in the end of the month? Even if it is insured, how all the process would work. So there's a lot of unknowns, and it did create a lot of confusions for us. But I think, it was a little less stress For us compared to we knew that we'll be getting our money back.
Right. What were your immediate concerns? Did you have, for instance, payroll to meet?
Yes. So a little bit of our company, we're a little more of a cross-border, let's say, international engagement that we have. So we work with about 125 clothing factories around the world and about 60 clothing brands. So part of it, even though, you know, like we do a lot of international transfers back and forth, kind of collecting funds and, you know, sending those. So I think we knew that there are funds that needs to be transferred or to our customers or to our manufacturers. And understanding all those processes, what we need to do within the short term and long term. So these are the things that we were concerned at that point.
Mm-hmm. And so it was a busy few days?
Yeah, I would say it was very, it was a busy, busy few days. But again, you know, as I said, I think we were, you know, very grateful that we have a lot of advisors and the board and the investors. They were very supportive. And I think this is something that wasn't part of the playbook for startups. And I think a lot of founders like Matthew and I, we really learned through this hard hard way through the Silicon Valley, right?
Yeah.
Hard way mean is for a lot of other founders that this wasn't part of it. So now I think the cash management is really in the lights for all the startups.
I don't know if you heard Matthew's story completely, but it sounds to me by what you're describing, perhaps you didn't have the depths of worries that he had. or did you? Was it you know, were you thinking worst case scenario? And if so, what was that?
I think in terms of worst case scenario, I think there are a few similarities in terms of, like, are we talking about, like, you know, 6 months, 3 months, you know, what time frame that, you know, we'll be getting those funds? And I think right away the priority was our employees and the team members, right? Mm-hmm. You know, how are we able to make those payrolls and what are the alternatives that we have? So right away, I think we're able to talking to our other banks that we're working with, talking to our investors, talking to alternative funds, that we're able to access right away. So I think, you know, part of that is figuring, I feel like for us probably, yeah, I listened to Matthew. I was probably a little more calm, I would say, because I knew that I think it'll be okay. At the end of the day, I think as a founders, I think resilience really plays a big role out of it, right? You know,
yeah.
I think we know that we'll be okay. And that's why we do startups. Even though it was stressful, I know that my wife was very stressful throughout the weekend. And I was like, hey, we'll be okay. And I think we'll figure it out. And I think finding those tools and resources and talking to people who can help, I think that was the first responses that we had.
Yeah. And how have you, based on this experience, this little scare, fine-tuned your finances there, making any changes?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, this has really changed quite a bit for a lot of the startups. We are actually in the middle of raising a round for us, about $3 million. So, you know, part of it is this is something we are also putting on our playbook of how are you going to manage, how are we going to avoid this scenario in the future. And I think part of that, you know, Matthew's mentioned, diversification. Right now, we're banking with JP Morgan and Chase, local bank like Lincoln Savings Banks. And, you know, so we have other banks that we work with. So it's really kind of figuring out the diversification of that funds. And there are other tools like, you know, you have a insured FDIC insured cash sweep account, where that is you have insurance more than 250 or, you know, millions of insurance that could be received on those accounts. So just understanding that. And I think the key is here for startups is the cash preservation and how they will do it. So this has changed quite a bit from my perspective for a lot of founders and the CFOs to think about it. How they're going to protect their money.
Yeah. Russell, before we go, how's your company doing now?
Yeah, I think we have been, yeah, it's been a great, so a little bit of our company, we started in 2021, within the last year, 2022, we had 300% growth in the company. Currently, we're serving over 60 clothing brands. And we're also, we're also working with some of the largest brand right now that are in our pipeline. So we're really excited for the growth that we have and also excited to grow our company in Iowa.
Yeah, that is exciting. How many people do you employ?
So right now we have 14 team members.
Yeah, excellent. Russell, you take care. I hope we can check back with you in the future to see how your company is doing. How do people find it online?
So the company for people, they can visit dhakai.com. So it's dhakai.com for anybody to start a clothing brand. We're the place to be.
Okay. Russell Kareem, founder and CEO of dhakai.com. Thank you very much. Originally from Bangladesh, this is such a great entrepreneurial story. Graduate of the University of Northern Iowa and then on to venture schools at the UI. A success story. Russell, glad you could share it with us and glad you're over this hump. What should we call it? A little ripple? I don't know.
I would say saga, maybe.
Okay, that's a good word for it. You take care, Russell.
Thank you so much, Ben.
It's River to River from IPR News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Finally today, as we discuss the collapse of SVB, Silicon Valley Bank, the financial shockwaves worldwide here in Iowa, the implications, especially for those of us in the Midwest, let's check in with the head of an Iowa bank to get that view. John Rigler II is CEO and board chairman of People's Bank based in Clive, there in the Des Moines area. John, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Ben. I'm happy to be on. Thank you for inviting me.
Give us, if you could, a quick snapshot of your bank, its size, who you serve, how it fits into our banking system here in the Midwest.
Sure. We're a pretty typical community bank in Iowa. We're $460 million in size. We operate in 9 communities, the Des Moines metropolitan area, and then West Central Iowa as well. We're very much an ag-oriented bank, but very much a commercial real estate-oriented bank. And we have connections with the venture community through several different sources and experiences that we've had in the past. But pretty typical. 90% of our deposits are FDIC insured, unlike Silicon Valley Bank, where only 10% of their deposits were insured. But we work with a broadly diversified group of people financing their operations and helping them manage their wealth.
Yeah. John, and I understand you responded to one Silicon Valley Bank venture capitalist's needs. But tell us the story of what happened.
Well, actually, we responded to two, and we're proud of how that worked out. On Thursday, I think it was the 9th of March, we received a call from a venture capitalist friend who was acquainted with my son. They knew each other from the University of Wisconsin when they were both students there, and he was desperate. He'd been getting advice from venture capital leaders telling him to get their money out of Silicon Valley Bank and ask if we could help, and we said, of course we can. We told him how to do it, and we told him his panic was twofold. He had $1.7 million on deposit at Silicon Valley Bank, and he had to make his payroll on Monday, March 13th, and that payroll would be about $250,000. So we advised him on how to get an account opened, and that moved into Friday the 10th, and we were able to get his account opened, with technology, be able to do that, and advise him on how to get his money moved. But by Friday the 10th, the FDIC had basically taken control of Silicon Valley Bank. And at the same time, he had a friend, a partner, venture capitalist that had $5 million on deposit at Silicon Valley Bank. And we began working with that person to get their $5 million out of Silicon Valley and get it to People's Bank. And that was a little later in the process, and they weren't able to get their accounts open. But the first fellow, at $1.7 million, we were able to get accounts opened and got him prepared and set up to meet his payroll on Monday the 13th. But then over the weekend, as you know, the FDIC came in and guaranteed all deposits and protected things. So the scare and the panic abated rather quickly.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting the way you reacted with your sized bank here. I mean, I have to believe that, would you say the stories, the two accounts you just gave of how your bank jumped in to help these panicky venture capitalists, I mean, are those stories hundreds, perhaps thousands of those stories across the country?
Oh, I would think so. I think for any venture capitalist out there was scrambling to find another source. When we first started talking to these people, their first reaction was they would open their accounts at First Republic Bank. We all know what's happened with First Republic Bank. They had similar issues to Silicon Valley Bank, and they needed assistance to accommodate the runs on their bank. But so after they realized that putting their money taking their money out of Silicon Valley, putting it into First Republic was not a good idea, then they said, boy, Iowa sure looks good. Good, safe place to put their money. And so then we got the accounts open here.
Yeah.
But we could have done all this on Thursday, but got it done on Friday, and everything's turned out just fine. But no, I think anybody in the venture capital business, as your previous speakers have indicated, they're scrambling to find other banks to work with, local banks or whatever. And it's always good. It's always wise to have more than one banking relationship. I think they all ought to be a People's Bank, but quite frankly, people ought to have their business in other places. You need every business person, especially a venture capitalist, needs to have a plan A, a plan B, and a plan C.
Yeah. How has this banking failure impacted your bank more generally? It's wonderful to hear how you've saved a couple of venture capitalists or helped save them. Are your deposits up? Or are you perceived as more secure, generally speaking, now? Does it raise your profile?
Well, I suspect it does. Our deposits are up. The net effect of this has been good. It's for us. It's been positive for us. A lot of our customers have called and asked about their affairs, and we work with people with as little as $1,000 in their account, and we work with people that have tens of millions of dollars in their accounts. We can work with them, not just with FDIC insurance, but for larger institutional clients, we can acquire other FDIC insurance and private insurance to cover and protect their deposits way beyond $250,000.
Yeah.
So we can work with the small ones and the big ones.
When we zoom out, John, is this a case of regulatory failure? What are your biggest concerns in the wake of this?
Well, quite frankly, Silicon Valley Bank was a bank that didn't need to fail. It failed because of ineptitude at the federal level, the regulatory level. Federal Home Loan Bank of San Francisco could have and should have provided the liquidity needed. The Federal Reserve Bank of San Francisco was slow to act, and the Federal Reserve System in Washington, D.C. was slow to act, and the FDIC was slow to act. They are not geared. They should be geared. They know how to be geared. They know that they operate in a world that moves quickly, but they certainly weren't able to accommodate the needs because of the run that happened. Silicon Valley Bank had plenty of collateral, plenty of borrowing ability to raise the liquidity needed, but the liquidity went out so fast, the federal government was not, they were responsive, but they were too slow in their response. And this never should have happened. And you and I should not be having this conversation on the phone, on the radio today, quite
yeah,
frankly.
Yeah, yeah. In the final minute or so we have, John, what is the lesson here for individuals, those of us who are not startup entrepreneurs, just want to have some safe money and a safe place to put the money? Should we have any worry? Should we do anything differently?
Not really, quite frankly. Your money's safe. If you're beyond $250,000, have a conversation with your banker, and I'd recommend a community banker, somebody that knows your community, is involved in your community, and has a well-diversified book of business, and ask them how you can help get additional coverage beyond the $250,000 that you might have with that bank. They'll work with you. They'll help you. They'll get it done.
Mm-hmm. Very quickly, in less than a minute, is there a political dimension to this? Should Congress do something else? We had all the regulations after 2008.
No. What they need to do is put some pressure on the Federal Reserve, the Federal Home Loan Bank System, the FDIC, and expect them to be responsive to a highly technical and technologically savvy bunch of people.
Okay, John, I didn't think I was going to get a bank CEO to say government needs to put in more regulations on banks, but I gave it a try, didn't I?
That is not it. They'll probably have more regulation to give themselves political cover. That's what's probably going to happen.
All right.
It's not needed. They've got all the tools they need.
John Rigler II, CEO, Board Chairman of People's Bank, based in Clive. John, thank you so much for your view.
You're welcome, Ben. Goodbye.
Goodbye now. Tomorrow on the program, a Politics Day edition, Jim McCormick of Iowa State University, Megan Goldberg of Cornell College. We hope you'll join us. Today's program produced by Samantha McIntosh with help from Caitlin Troutman. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us. Talk with you again tomorrow.